This is VK6ARN, News West. We are a community organisation and we've been serving up the best amateur radio news in Australia since 1931. Hi there and welcome to News West for the 6th of August 2023. Now over to Brad Peters, VK6 Bravo Alpha Papa.
The Northern Corridor Radio Group is holding its annual Hamfest on Sunday, the 20th of August, 2023. This year, you'll find us again at the Cyril Jackson Community Hall in Bassendean, which is conveniently located for easy access by car and public transport. Alight at Ashfield if you're catching the train. The Hamfest starts at 9 a.m. and will finish around 12 noon when the raffle prize winners will be announced. This year, the NCRG have a fantastic array of raffle prizes, including first prize, a HF FT710 HF 50 MHz radio valued at $1,695. Second prize is an ICOM ID52A handheld with D-Star 2 and 70 valued at $849. Third prize is an MFJ Enterprises MFJ991B HF antenna tuner valued at $400. And finally, fourth prize is a Raspberry Pi 4B DIY kit with case, fan, cables, and a 60 gigs SD card. It's valued around $320. More details are available on the WA Hams, the NCRG Facebook page, and the club website. When you're at the event, please visit the NCRG's club table to see the progress of the NCRG Earth Moon Earth Station. It's nearly complete and ready to roll. John, VK6NU, will be promoting Summits of the Air, so if you're interested in this facet of amateur radio, be sure to drop by and have a chat with John. Many exhibitors are also lining up for this year's event. Future Systems, QSL Comms, TET Mtron, and Bushcom, along with a range of local amateur radio clubs. And if you have one, make sure you bring your handheld. Don't miss out on your chance to snap up a deal and catch up with on-air friends for a coffee and a chat. If you're interested in selling at the Hamfest, please don't hesitate to contact the NCRG Hamfest coordinator, Brad Peters, VK6BAP.
You may have noticed that News West has been getting a bit light on for content lately. Well, that can be fixed. You've all got a story to tell, and people would love to hear it. We've always said that your story, be it your experience doing something or notice of a club activity, sounds a lot better coming from you, in your voice, because it's you talking about something you have ownership of, or your lived experience. If, however, the thought of making a recording terrifies you so much, you can send the text to us and someone will record it for you. What a bargain that is. Whether you send text or audio, send it as an email attachment to newswest@vk6.net.
Hi, I'm Steve, VK6SJ, with this week's episode of Did You Know? In the past, amateur radio has played a more significant role in emergency communications than seems to be the case now. 30 to 40 years ago, hams were the experts in radio and could weave their magic to assist the community in times of need. These days, the tables mostly turned and emergency services have their own highly skilled teams with vast networks covering a large chunk of the state, 000 call centres, tactical comms plans, etc., to the point where now we're only involved in emergency communications at a volunteer level and then only in small pockets. Peel Amateur Radio Group are one such group and Weissen another, although I can't say I know much about Weissen's activities. Sounds like a good article for Weissen to produce, eh? PARG work closely with their local SES team and I believe provide a lot of value to the equation with data comms, comms trailers and trained operators, etc. Talking to a lot of public safety agency personnel, particularly ones who aren't hams, you get a faint smile and rolling of the eyes if you talk about the amateur sector, giving me the impression that we've lost a lot of ground in respect from that sector. I'm not going to delve into the whys of that, but because it's non-productive. Having said that, there are a lot of hams who are also members of various volunteer and professional emergency service organisations, so there's a latent opportunity, I believe, in starting that conversation with the emergency services sector and rebuilding that relationship, albeit in a different way to the past. I think it's also incumbent on the various clubs to also engage at a more local level, and perhaps organisations like the WIA to engage with public safety agencies on a national scale to see what assistance from the amateur sector would be of value. On that note, I think the conversation needs to revolve around what the emergency services sector would value, not just what we would enjoy delivering. In addition, providing the use of our stations, including repeaters, during an emergency, on their terms, not ours. This could be as simple as having a couple of extra antennas on a mast with the means of easily connecting it to a portable repeater. Means that a comms team could turn up at your site, plug a repeater into the spare antennas and feeders you have, so they can easily set up a site. If there were a network of these sites made available with no preconditions, i.e. they just turn up and use them, this would be something of value and at no cost or additional effort to our emergency service teams or ourselves. This would be a similar setup to the network of water tanks, pools and dams that are made available to fire services to save time in refilling tankers. As a group, we could agree on what we are providing. The HF site I use has a VHF and UHF omnidirectional pair of antennas with feeders being terminated in an enclosure at the base of the mast with N-type bulkhead sockets to make it easy to connect a portable repeater. This could be added to a database and provided to relative agencies so that if they ever needed the facility, they know where it is and what is there. Same could be done for HF communications. This is one area I think the amateur sector is fast becoming the last bastion of expertise in. PARG are using this to good effect with their data comms capability, but on a different note, maybe there could be a way that ham HF sites could be seconded and accessed remotely to provide a more robust network for any agency working outside the Perth metro area. As a group, we have a decent repeater network that may augment emergency service networks outside the Perth metro. If those of us that own repeater sites allowed emergency services to have access to our networks with the occasional training day to test the viability of the networks, this could be seen to be of value as well. Setting up a means for agencies having priority access, perhaps using CTCSS, then it just becomes another redundancy option that comes at no additional cost to the taxpayer or us as the owners of the sites. These are things that help us to justify the continued access to spectrum that we currently enjoy. This and activities like JOTA also ensure we retain relevance to the community, further justifying our existence. Along these lines, the conflict playing out in Ukraine makes me think of what the amateur community could be doing to be prepared someday for a similar event in Australia. I'm not advocating we run out the backyard and start building a bomb shelter and collecting cans of baked beans, but if something like this happened to the Ukrainians happened here, amateur radio could easily end up being the only form of publicly available communications. What could we do to ensure that we can provide some value to the community in that kind of event? Food for thought, eh? Well, thanks for listening again. This is Steve, AK6SJ, with another episode of Did You Know?
Sneaking up on us this month is the Remembrance Day contest. Yep, it's almost on top of us. The RD contest is on the 12th and 13th of August, and without even counting on my fingers, that's next weekend. The RD is a 24-hour contest, and it runs from 0300 UTC on Saturday through to 0300 hours on Sunday. That means it starts at 11 a.m. Western Standard Time on Saturday and ends at 11 a.m. for us on Sunday. This is a contest that you can do from your home station or go portable if you wish. It's up to you. The RD is known as the Friendly Contest, and if the bands are good to us, we should do okay. You should visit the WIA website to look through the rules. Be aware that traditionally here in Perth we earn a good chunk of our Aussie contest points on 80 metres and VHF, UHF, however, and there's always a however, the other bands could be open and you could do well on those too. Logging software makes your contesting easier and the Aussie software, VK Contest Logger, works this contest perfectly. Contests can be fun, so give it a bash. You don't have to do the whole 24 hours. I don't. I don't have the stamina for it. Nor do you have to do a single block of time on air. You can do as much time on air as you like within the 24-hour period. Good luck with the RD contest.
Since 1931, News West has provided amateur radio news for Western Australia and beyond. This is VK6ARN.
We've been a bit quiet about Perth Tech lately, but don't worry. Arrangements for Perth Tech are well underway, and we're sorting out a good lineup of presenters. The date for Perth Tech is the 27th, 28th and 29th of October, with the main event on Saturday the 28th. The feedback on parking caravans on site last year was very positive, and we're offering this again in 2023. At one time last year, we had 17 caravans, campers, etc. on site. The Perth Tech Weekend will start on Friday night with some loosely organised activity, and being amateurs, this could consist of setting up our portable gear with an I'll show you mine if you show me yours thing going on, with barbecues available and some good takeaways available nearby. Saturday is the main event with presentations all day, punctuated with food and coffee. We'll repeat the Sundowner on Saturday night, as that proved popular last year as well. On Sunday, we'll offer free workshops when someone gives a practical demonstration on some aspect of amateur radio. These are provided where someone offers to conduct them. There's no charge and locations could vary. Again, we plan to offer Perth Tech free to all amateurs. Well, almost free. We do charge a token fee for the catering. And here's the fun part. We pay for Perth Tech out of the proceeds of our raffle. And of course, we also receive donations and put them to work to make Perth Tech a successful activity. We'll announce our Perth Tech raffle at Hamfest. Being our usual gracious selves, we offered the NCRG the courtesy of not competing with the Hamfest raffle. Aren't we good blokes? So there's a couple of things you can do now to make Perth Tech a success. Firstly, set the date aside. Saturday the 28th of October for the main event, Friday the 27th to Sunday the 29th of October for the whole weekend. Tell your amateur radio friends and club members about Perth Tech. Next, buy raffle tickets. They're only $5 each. Buy several. And they're available from Hamfest onwards and will be drawn at Perth Tech. They can be bought online. It's all too easy, isn't it? Lastly, give some consideration, especially clubs, to making a donation towards Perth Tech. Last year, we received some generous donations, and we put these towards the day raffle, and we had a table full of prizes to give away. We'd like to repeat that again, so please consider donating to Perth Tech. Email your intention to my email, which is perthtech@vk6.net, and I'll give you our banking details. And our website is vk6.net. That's the lot. Perth Tech 2023, Saturday 28th of October.
Hello everyone, this is Clive, VK6, Charlie Sierra Whiskey, reminding you that the Radio Amateurs Old Timers Club of Australia's August bulletin goes to air tomorrow. Frequency change. Don't forget that the 00 hours UTC, that's 8 a.m. WA local time, transmission is now on 10 metres on 28.450 MHz until further notice. Full details of this change, plus all other broadcast times, can be found on the club website www.raotc.org.au or by googling RAOTC broadcasts. However, this 10-metre transmission is beamed southeastwards by VK8MA from Katherine in the Northern Territory, so may or may not be held in WA, but it's worth a try. Don't forget, too, that even if none of the transmission times suit you, you can download the audio file at any time from today from the club website. If you do download the file, a brief feedback comment would be appreciated. This month, as well as the latest club news, I'll be talking about OBO, a British World War II bomb-aiming system, which was the forerunner of DME, or distance measuring equipment. This will be followed by Bill, VK3BR, who talks about a book review on the Tatura Secret Radio. Everyone, RAOTC members and non-members alike, is most welcome to listen to the programme and to join in the callbacks afterwards. At 8 a.m. local time tomorrow, as well as the transmission on 28.450 MHz, there's a transmission via digital mobile radio on the VKDMR network Talk Group 5. At 9 a.m, Chris, VK6JI, will transmit the bulletin on 80 metres on 3620 kHz, with a repeat at 10 a.m. on 7088 kHz, and also at 10 a.m. there's a transmission via the NewsWest linked repeater system. On Wednesday, August the 9th, we have a D-Star broadcast at 5:30 p.m. WA local time. This will be transmitted via D-Star Reflector 91C and will follow the D-Star news line. On Sunday, August the 13th, repeats of the RAOTC bulletin follow the 160-metre and 40-metre broadcast of the WIA News. The next lunchtime meeting for members and friends of the RAOTC is Tuesday, August the 8th, at the Woodbridge Hotel, 50 East Street, Guildford. We meet at 11:30 for midday lunch. An attractive, well-priced seniors menu is available, which can be viewed online. Everyone's welcome to join in and have an eyeball QSO. There's adequate car parking, but if coming by train, be sure to alight at Guildford East. Repeat, Guildford East Station. Full details are on the club website under the heading Luncheons. Once again, tune in tomorrow for the August broadcast, and we look forward to hearing your call sign in the callbacks. 73 from Clive, VK6, CSW.
Good morning, fellow amateurs and shortwave listeners. This is Roy, VK6, X-Ray Victor. This week's Amateur Radio Helpline, the 6th of August, 2023. I have wandered today 160 through 10 metre or 80 metre, 10 metre tabletop valve AMCW 50 watt transmitter, such as a Johnson Ranger, a Panda Cub, a KW Vanguard, a KW Valiant, or a Geloso equivalent. So that's a AM transmitter, 50 watts thereabouts. I would consider a similar homebrew transmitter. Please email all the details to Steve, VK6 Victor Zulu. Also wanted is a glass octal vacuum tube type for restoration of a World War II National HRO MX receiver. The tubes required are a 6 Delta 6, a 6 Charlie 6, a 6 Bravo 7, and a number 42. Even if you only have one of these tubes, I'd be very happy to hear from you and pay for them. Please drop me a line at Steve, VK6 Victor Zulu. Steve's email address is Sierra Tango Echo Victor Kilo 6 Victor Zulu at tpg.com.au. I'll repeat again, Sierra Tango Echo Victor Kilo Figure 6 Victor Zulu at tpg.com.au. Thank you, says Steve. The next group of items comes from Barry, VK6 Alpha Delta India, on behalf of Jerry Wild, VK6 Golf Whiskey, who is now in a nursing home. We're hoping to dispose of some of his radio gear. He's 94 years of age and has broken his hip, and he's not too good at the moment. If you're in the market for any radio equipment, we have today a Daiwa DC, that's Delta Charlie 7011 round controller with Daiwa antenna rotator, model Delta Romeo 7600 Charlie X-ray, requires 6-core connecting cable, tested okay, asking $400. There's also an early model Yaesu speaker, all metal case, good condition, suits the old FT300, FT400 series of transceiver, asking $25. The next item is a vacuum tube voltmeter, model 1600 Bravo by Romeo Delta Instruments. It's old but it works and still has an instruction manual supplied, asking $100. And now the big one, a Helicrafters 2 kilowatt linear amplifier, model Hotel Tango 33, requires a 2 kilovolt power supply, covers HF frequencies 80 through 10 meters, uses 2-4 Charlie X-ray 250 Bravo in the final RF unit, complete with filaments and bias transformers. Good project for someone to experiment with. Comes with a manual, covers spares, and used 4 CX250 tubes, asking $450. Contact Barry for all those items. His email address is bravo.juliet.burns, Bravo Uniform Romeo November Sierra, at bigpond.com. I'll say again, bravo.juliet.bravouniformromeonovembersierra at bigpond.com, or mobile 0428 959 771, 0428 959 771. Now a repeat from last week. We're looking for an ICOM 7100, a 7100 transceiver, antenna analyzer, any model make for quick SWR checks, a 40 meter to 10 meter vertical antenna, such as can be compacted down to a short length like 1.5 meters to make it easy to move, 5/8 wavelength monobander for 20 meters, a 5/8 monobander mobile antenna for 40 metres. Also a Mike Alpha Tango Dash 125 Echo Tuner. I'll say again, Mike Alpha Tango 125 Echo Tuner for Kai in Broome. If you could drop in and tell him what you've got, if you can help him with any of those items. Transceiver plus antenna analyzer and antennas and tuner. Kai can be contacted by email victorkilo6kilosierrajuliet@westnet.com.au. That's victorkilo6kilosierrajuliet@westnet.com.alphauniform. And Greg has asked me to re-advertise his ICOM IC718 HF transceiver. 10 metres to 160 metres, 100 watts out. Comes with hand microphone, power lead and the original handbook. Very good condition, no scratches, no marks. $450 asking. Contact Greg, VK6 Echo Delta, on phone 0417 900 874. Again, 0417 900 874. And that, my friends, is all. That's enough of me for this week. And if you have any items for next week, don't forget VK6XRayVictor@bigpond.com. It's not working, sorry. Try roy.watkins at email. roy.watkins@bigpond.com. roy.watkins@bigpond.com. That should still work. I'm still working on the other one. I don't know what's going on with that. But this is VK6XRayVictor now, 73.
This is News West from VK6ARN.
Foundations of Amateur Radio. The first official telegram to pass between two continents was a letter of congratulations from Queen Victoria of the United Kingdom to President of the United States, James Buchanan, on 16 August 1858. The text is captured in the collection of the US Library of Congress. It's a low-resolution image of a photo of a wood engraving. Based on me counting the characters, the text from the Queen to the President is about 650 characters. IEEE reports it as 98 words, where my count gives 103 words or 95 words, depending on how you count the address. Due to a misunderstanding between the operators at either end of the 3,200-kilometre-long cable, the message took 16 hours to transmit and 67 minutes to repeat back. If you use the shortest duration, the effective speed is just over 1.5 words per minute, or WPM. That's not fast in comparison with speeds we use today. Until 2003, the ITU expected that emergency and meteorological messages should not exceed 16 words per minute, that a second-class operator could achieve 20 words per minute, and a first-class operator could achieve 25 words per minute. To put the message speed in context of the era, in 1856, RMS Persia, an iron paddle wheel steamship and at the time the largest ship in the world, won the so-called Blue Riband for the fastest westbound transatlantic voyage between Liverpool and Sandy Hook. The journey took 9 days, 16 hours and 16 minutes. Similarly, it wasn't until 1861 that a transcontinental telegraph was established across the United States. In 1841, it took 110 days for the news of the death in office of President William Henry Harrison to reach Los Angeles. Today, that distance is covered by a 39-hour drive, a 5-hour flight, and about 12 milliseconds on HF radio. So, while the speed of the message might not be anything to write home about today, at the time it was world-changing. Speed in Morse code is measured in a specific way. Based on International Morse code, which is what I'm using throughout this discussion, if you send the word Paris 12 times in a minute, and the next time starts right on the next minute, you officially sent Morse at 12 words per minute. Looking inside the message of the word Paris, it's made up of a collection of dits and dars. If a dit is 1 unit of time, then the letter A, represented by dit-da, is 6 units long when you include the spacing. In total, the word Paris, including the space after it, is exactly 50 units long. When you send at 12 words per minute, you're effectively sending 600 dit units per minute, or 10 units or bits per second, each lasting a tenth of a second. Unfortunately, there's not a one-to-one relationship between Morse speed and ASCII, the American standard code for information interchange, for a number of reasons. Firstly, Morse is made from symbols with varying lengths, where ASCII, the encoding that we really want to compare speeds with, has symbols with a fixed length. You cannot simply count symbols in both and compare their speeds, since communication speed is about what you send, how fast you send it, and how readable it is at the other end. Thanks to Aiden, Alpha Delta 8 Golf Mike, who, inspired by my initial investigation, shared the idea and Python code to encode Morse dits, dars, and spacing using a 1 for a dit, 111 for a dar, and zeros for spacing. This means that the letter E can be represented by 10, and the letter T by 1110. You can do this for the standard Morse word Paris and end up with a combination of 50 zeros and ones, or exactly 50 bits. I've been extending the code that Aiden wrote to include other encoding systems. When I have something to show, it will be on my GitHub page. However, using Aiden's idea, we gain the ability to directly compare sending Morse bits with ASCII bits, since they share the same 0 and 1 encoding. If you use standard binary encoded ASCII, each letter takes up 8 bits, and the 6 characters for the word Paris, including the space, will take up 48 bits. Given that I just told you that the Morse version of the same message takes up 50 bits, you could now smile and say, "See, ASCII is faster." Wait, what? Yes, if you send the word Paris using 8-bit binary-coded ASCII, it's 2 bits shorter than if you use Morse. Job done. Roll the press. Headline reads, "Morse is 4% slower than binary-coded ASCII." Not so fast, Grasshopper. If you recall, American Morse code, the one that has Samuel Morse's name written all over it, was replaced by a different code made by Friedrich Gerke, which in turn was modified to become what we now know as International Morse Code. Ask yourself, why did Gerke change the code? It turns out that one of the biggest issues with getting a message across an undersea cable was decoding the message at the other end. Let me give you an example using American Morse. Consider the encoding of E, dit, and O, dit, extra space, dit. And now try sending the word seed across a noisy line. Did you convey seed, or was it sod? In other words, there is room for ambiguity in the message, and when you're talking about commerce, that's never a good basis for coming to a mutually binding agreement. It turns out that encoding needs to be more subtle than just creating a sequence of bits. Something else to consider. 10 bits per second is another way of saying 10 hertz, as in, this is not just switching, we're dealing with frequencies. And because we're not sending lovely sinusoidal waves, from a signal processing perspective, a very horrible square wave, we're also dealing with harmonics. Lots of harmonics. And more of them as we speed things up. So, if you send binary-coded ASCII and compare it to Morse code, will your message actually arrive? I'm Ono, Victor Kilo 6, Foxtrot Lima, Alpha Bravo.
Hi there, I'm Clinton, VK6FCRC, and I'd like to thank our News West team of volunteers and broadcasters each week, and those regularly submitting content each week. I'd also like to thank our readers, and you for listening. Please stand by now for callbacks after the ident. Or if nobody is taking callbacks, please fill out the form on the VK6.net website so we know how many people are listening or reading News West each week.